Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is my wonderful co-host and spider pig over here, Mr. Spencer Williams.
How dare you? Not anyone spider pig.
Well, you know, I couldn't call you the spider noir because that would have been racist. And also with us today is our resident comic genius and intern slash part-timer slash stenographer. Amy is with us today.
I'm an aficionado and a genius? When did this happen?
See, we got to stop letting HR write these scripts. I tell you, they give us too much leeway. Speaking of comics, we have a great show in store for you today as we will be talking about the recently dropped sequel to the 2018 smash hit animated film, and that is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. So stick around as we dive into that and get into all the wonderful details, homages, retrospects, paying homage, everything that this movie has, Easter eggs. Before we get into that, Spencer, why don't you give us some opening credits?
Okay, let's take it one more time from the top. Tune in each and every Thursday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms.
Thursday morning.
We're on Thursday morning.
We're on Thursday.
Thursday. So don't come
we try.
So tune in each and every Thursday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101, especially Twitter.
Especially Twitter. That's right. You can check us out over at our website at filmlosophers.com, where we have allegedly over 300 episodes of all movie goodness, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, romance. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website, filmlosophers.com. Also, you can check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a follow, a subscribe, listen in, let us know how we're doing, and in fact, if you think we've earned it, give us 5 stars, because we've earned it!
We have!
Beep, boop, boop, yes.
What are you, a
This is
third
why...
week in a row. Yeah.
Yeah, this is why you're still an intern. Oh my gosh.
I mean, I can leave as easily as I can.
I don't know. The contract you signed, it's pretty ironclad.
I signed something?
Yeah, you did. So.
Wait, what?
So we are excited to talk about this movie. But before we do, Spencer said he wanted to bring something up beforehand.
Oh yes.
Apparently, this is like a PSA from Spencer. So. Or just a thought.
It's the standard thing. Just be careful what you post on Twitter because you never know.
Oh boy,
who might respond to you?
Oh,
wait. I'm so surprised you did not know where this was going.
I was like, where are you going with this?
So, what was this Friday? We posted the info on our Sharknado.
Well, episode. We dropped the episode Friday morning.
Yeah,
because someone was like, not me.
Hey, you know, when your host, producer, scriptwriter, all these things.
He does a fine, good job.
Yeah, thank you, Spencer. Yeah. Hey, that's why you're still the intern. Go ahead, Spencer.
So, as you do, the information got posted to Twitter. A short time after that, we got a response.
So hold on. Let's give a little precedence here. Mm-hmm. So, unless you haven't listened to last week's episode, we did a review on the Sharknado franchise. And. Let me know if you're done. So.
Okay.
And since we talked about the Sharknado franchise, if you've been a listener for any length of time on this show, you know Spencer is a huge B-movie enthusiast, and he loves just the idiocy of some of these movies that make him just laugh with glee.
Mm-hmm.
I, on the other hand, have a certain level of intolerance towards unintelligence. And when it comes to certain movies, it's a little harder to stomach. So we did a very unique and somewhat interesting review of the Sharknado franchise, as it's actually our second go around on talking about Sharknado films.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously I struggled through that conversation. Yes. Spencer and Amy, which this was Amy's first time watching it.
A wonderful time it was.
They both had a blast.
We did. It was really fun. Yeah. You were getting slightly inebriated, but we were sober and hilarious.
Okay, I'm talking about the review.
Oh, yeah. We were all sober for that one.
So... So that's the way the review went, and the information on it was thusly reflecting that kind of mentality. So it posted on the internet. Spencer, take it away.
Okay, so I feel like I should just read what we posted. So filmosopher Spencer and intern Amy torture filmosopher Eddie with a revisit to the franchise that almost made him rage quit the show. As we recap Amy's first time viewing of the Asylum cult classic franchise Sharknado. And so shortly, like a few hours later.
Nope. It was not a few hours. I kid you not.
Look at this.
It was like probably within an hour.
It was 2 hours.
Was it 2 hours?
According to the timestamp.
Okay. It was 2 hours.
All right. So 2 hours after we posted.
A whirlwind can make time move really fast. Just saying.
Yeah. We found that out in the last one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, So 2 hours later, we get a response. From the man, the myth, the legend.
Well, we got a like. We got a heart first.
Start with a like.
I can't see that part. I can only see what's on.
Well, because the only reason why I say is because I was watching it in real time, and I'm like, what is happening here? What? So we get a like, and it's from...
Thunder11, the writer of Sharknados 1 through 4.
Yes.
He was doing the work.
It was like, either he's got like some kind of macros on there that are like... that are alerting him every time a keyword pops up or something.
Yeah, because he's not tagged in this.
No,
it's only,
I didn't.
The Asylum and Sharknado.
Yeah. But it's also almost their anniversary. It's their 10-year anniversary.
Well, it
up.
Is their 10-year anniversary this year.
So I was like, oh no.
I don't
we
know
have
how
chummed
that,
the water.
That
you know,
passed me by.
We literally said 2013 so many times throughout that episode, and we talked about it outside of the show over while we were watching the movies, and it never dawned on us, 2013? 2023? So
yeah, dang, we're early to this.
we're chumming the waters. Happy 10-year anniversary. Sorry.
So anyway, Thunder replied, experiencing rage over Sharknado is to completely miss the point, methinks. Let me tell you, this made my Friday. I was obsessed with this.
Well, and then you did respond through the Filmosopher Twitter account.
Yeah. Reply is, we tried to help Eddie understand that, but Amy and myself know these movies are all about B-movie goodness, hashtag Sharks rule.
So, yeah.
Called out by Thunder.
Here's the odd thing, and I don't...
No,
I
because
mean,
the
mind
best
you,
part is that I replied to that, too.
So, okay, so I don't know if you got your...
Oh, I'd have to pull it up.
That's right, blood. Ah.
Oh.
So Spencer has it open.
Spencer has it. Yeah, so after seeing that shenanigans, as I said, I had the best run of emotions when I watched this franchise. My favorite moment, which still is, was Gilbert Gottfried's repeat reporting with the updates of all the evolving NATOs. Brilliant and hilarious.
Which
is 100% true, because it was a rock and roll NATO.
Which Thunder11 and
the Asylum
both liked that post, as well as our main post. And here's the kicker to all of this. I interviewed Thunder about like 8 years ago when the second film came out, second or third film. And I don't think he remembers, thank God. but it was a really good interview, and it was a really interesting, you know, kind of a self-discovery kind of thing, understanding the mindset behind it. But the fact that I don't know if I've steered far from where I've come from, or maybe I'm just reading too much into it, or I just don't care. It's Thunder11. I appreciate Thunder11 and all he's done for, you know, movies and for the first three movies.
Four.
Well, I appreciate the first one. that was an interesting Friday, and I remember sending Spencer text, and I just started seeing Spencer respond, and then Amy's responding through her own Twitter account.
I screamed in my office.
I just got a screaming text message because I sent out the reply, and I was like, "Eh, whatever." And then I get a text message back, and it goes, "The Asylum likes your post." And I was like, "What?"
Which I think would be a good enough time to kind of mention that come October, we got some Asylum goodies that we're going to be talking about.
Yes. I'm still working on the details, but we will be having our own Asylum month. We're going back into it.
Yeah,
we're just talking about Asylum.
It'll be interesting.
It's going to be a horror fest.
And I'm picking some that I haven't seen before, too.
Can we do the new one that they're releasing?
Why don't we talk about that on the planning? Listen, maybe if you came to the meetings outside of the show.
Let's turn this into a planning episode.
It's a planning episode.
So it's great the fact that we're getting, you know, we got recognized by Thunder and
the Asylum.
And the Asylum, the production studio. Mind you, I did at the end of that interview or at the end of that review did say, you know what? There is appreciation in those who create art and those who do it through their own lenses and whatnot. And so, hey, I mean, more power to them, more power to all of their, you know, the stuff that they're doing over there at the Asylum. Yeah, but I'm glad it made your day,
it
Spencer.
Really did.
So that was
Christmas came early.
That it did. And speaking of Christmas coming early, we are going to transition over into our main topic of the evening. And that is our take on Sony's sequel to the smash hit back in 2018, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. So this movie has been talked about widely, not only for its, not only for the story that was to follow, but also the massive impact and footsteps that the film before it left in its efforts through animation, through the ability of storytelling in animation and creating, honestly, one of the better Spider-Man films of the last 10 years, if we're being quite honest. So, before we dive into that, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
Miles Morales returns for the next chapter of the Oscar-winning Spider-Verse saga, an epic adventure that will transport Brooklyn's full-time friendly neighborhood Spider-Man across the multiverse to join forces with Gwen Stacy and a new team of spider people to face off with a villain more powerful than anything they've ever encountered.
Directed by Joaquin Dos Santos, Kemp Powers, and Justin K. Thompson in their feature directorial debuts, and from a screenplay written by Phil Lord, Christopher Miller, and Christopher Miller, the film stars Shameik Moore as Miles alongside Haley Steinfeld, Brian Tyree Henry, Luna Lauren Velise, Jake Johnson, Jason Schwartzman, Issa Rae, Karen Soni, Daniel Kaluuya, Mahershala Ali, and Oscar Isaac. A couple pieces of information. Phil Lord and Christopher Miller revealed that they told Sony the sequel would be the same size as Into the Spider-Verse, but ended up having the largest crew of any animated movie ever, with around 1,000 people working on it. They actually added that it has 240 characters and takes place in 6 universes. However, I believe we got information a little bit ago that it's actually 260 or 252.
What, the characters? They created 208. That were not, like, are we talking about variations?
Then it might be like 240 characters altogether, not including spider people.
Yeah.
So, at a runtime of 2 hours and 20 minutes, which is 140 minutes altogether, this is the longest American animated film to date, surpassing the previous record holder, 2012's Consuming Spirits, by 4 minutes.
Dang, so, homies.
Which, honestly, you don't really ever notice the time on it going by so quickly. I mean, it could have been probably like 3 hours and I probably would have stuck around either way.
Yep.
Last piece of information, which I think is one of the more unique parts. Production on the film was completed on May 20th, 2013, 13 days before the U.S. release date. That is insane. Which means either they ran long and already were editing along the way, or they went back into production, did edits, and then released. But that's insane that 13 days before production, that means there was no time to make any kind of big changes if anything didn't work out. Well, good thing, you know, there was no scandal that happened within.
Yeah, very good thing. Or they didn't have a Toy Story 2 issue where it disappeared.
Toy Story 2, yeah. So, in talking about this movie, we are going to be discussing spoilers because of the fact that we want to. And I feel like this
Wiener,
movie,
Mr. Wiener.
This movie does deserve to have a conversation based around that. Because to be honest, a lot of this story, there's not a lot of like big reveals throughout this story, except for a few key parts. I can talk, I swear. Except for a few key parts. But those few key parts actually are pretty substantial to the overall story. So with that said, we're going to talk about it. So this is your first, last, and only warning. Spoiler alert, we're going to get into it. So let's talk expectations. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see the first film recently before walking into this one. No, I did.
I did. I watched it the night before.
Oh, you did? I'm just asking. Don't get all defensive. Sheesh.
Quiet. It's like, I don't take it do easy. My homework? Okay, weird.
So with knowing that in mind and knowing everything that ultimately where the MCU is going and with everything entailed and entangled and where we're at in like phase five, what were some of your guys' expectations coming into this movie? Let's start with Spencer.
I mean, I was really just expecting something to...
Amazing, I guess.
Bare minimum, like, match the last movie, but I kind of wanted to see something that pushed it forward, you know? And so that's why I just came in, was like, just like the goal of like either pushing it forward, either in like art style or music or just overall story. Hopefully all three, to be perfectly honest. But like, you know, I was just hoping for like, you know, what's the next level up from that last fantastic movie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Cause like that last movie really set the standard for modern interpretation of animation in cinema. Like, mm-hmm. honestly, it redefined the way a lot of people were doing, well, what we're going to be doing animation from that point moving forward. And so you just had to expect that they were going to have to step it up, because if it didn't match that bar, it was not going to be anything worth watching. Yeah. Amy, expectations?
I actually kind of agree with Spencer. I was coming in with the same kind of expectations that this was going to be a step forward and it was going to sidestep the curse of the sequel. Essentially, when it comes to animated movies, where you always get a number two and they're just like, that wasn't the best one.
I don't know if that's been true, though, as of late. Like, what sequels have we seen that haven't been decent or...
Oh, I was just talking as a whole, because I do not remember that second Aladdin movie that came out.
the Return of Jafar. Yeah, that was a good one. What? I like that one.
No, King of Thieves was way better. Yeah, King of Thieves is better.
It is better, but it doesn't mean that the Return of Jafar wasn't bad. Or wasn't good. Look, just because it went direct to video doesn't mean it wasn't bad.
So didn't the last one go to direct to video too?
King of Thieves went direct to video, but the animation was a lot better than in the second one.
What's your point?
I'm just saying that I had hope that the sequel
She's
was
comparing Miles Morales to Aladdin. Got it. Got it.
Are you done?
Go ahead.
Are you done being mean to me about this? Basically, I was just excited to see what was coming. And considering what I know about comic books, even though I am not a massive spider person, terrible joke, I was just ready to see what new adventures and new heights this could be taken to. Pun intended.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of expectations, honestly, my biggest thing was I know that when Into the Spider-Verse came out, the art style was completely out of left field.
Gorgeous.
It was absolutely beautiful. And with that, like, you have in mind everything that that movie did in that instance of that movie debuting, it was already like miles ahead. When I think about it, I think of like how Disney proper, like the theme parks, mm-hmm. how they come up with, you know, with engineering and new technology that is specifically just used for like their parks. And even the stuff that's out now in the park is really advanced. There's still probably more advanced stuff on the back end. And we see videos and clips of it every now and then of them like showing us like, hey, we're working on this or we're working on that. Like, you know that they have something great in store that they're working on in the back. And when it drops, it's going to be like the most mind-blowing thing. I see that with animation with this, where the first film completely changed the name of the game for animation. Mm. Like after that movie, we started seeing that animation style in just about everything coming up that was worth watching. Mitchell's versus the Machines, Puss in Boots. I mean, those are just to name a few. Also, both of those are tied to the Lord and Miller duo.
The directors of this also have places in those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my biggest expectation was I was hoping to see an art style that surpassed, or an animation art style, should I say, that was going to surpass the last film. And not only that, but that this movie was going to introduce us to a whole nother like universe of things that not just spider people, but things, revelations, information that wasn't going to be something that we were used to. Maybe we saw a glimpse of it with like the Marvel films and like Endgame and so forth, seeing all the different aspects of the multiverse for Marvel. But I feel like with what the driving team behind this, which Christopher Miller and Phil Lord both were the writers for this film, they were going to give us something absolutely unique and special for this movie. So I was expecting a lot, needless to say. I don't think that it's not without precedent because of everything that, you know, Into the Spider-Verse did. So, but let's talk first impressions right outside the gate. Amy.
I would have said to you because you have the biggest expectations. We should talk about yours first.
I can go last. Go ahead.
Whatever.
Come on, intern.
Impressions. I was delighted that this is being split into two movies. Yes, I could have sat there for longer. But
that's really your first impression?
It was. Do you know what we can?
She's like, I'm glad it's over because we need another.
I'm not wearing my glasses. Would you like me to push them up and go now or wait?
You can.
Yeah.
You can.
So I'm excited that this is two movies, and I not only was delighted but wholeheartedly engaged. Ha ha ha, Spencer.
The second.
That was not an expectation. That was just, okay. Go ahead.
It was
Spencer.
An impression, not an expectation.
Jeez, just. Gah, like first off, I don't want to wait 9 months.
Is that how long it's going to take?
Yeah. March next year.
Okay.
Yeah. But at least it's next year. It's not 2 years.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'd be mad. Yep. I would actually be mad.
Guys, it's been 5 years since the first one, okay?
Yeah, but like it didn't end on a super cliffhanger like this movie. That's the only thing that like made this like bearable is that there's not like a, and it's like, where are we going, you know?
But I wish I could have just taken a picture of that and bottled that.
But yeah, like, no, just first impression of this is like, they knocked it out of the park again.
Yeah.
Like, and I was just like floored, like at just how much quality. And
yeah.
Then also I got a little angry because I felt like everyone was just slacking. Like, isn't like,
he's like, wake up, Hollywood, get with it.
What are we doing? What are we doing here, people? Come on. What
about you? Writer's strike.
I mean, before.
Oh my gosh.
Come on. Clearly.
Honestly, first impression right outside the gate, this movie, and I was explaining this movie to someone at work today. I told them, and I thought this pretty much hit it on the nail on the head. This movie, if you removed all the dialogue and put lo-fi beats to it, would be a complete vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, absolutely.
100%. Yeah.
Everything about this movie just screams artistic expression. And the fact that Miles himself is an artist, and the unique art styles for not only each comic book character, but even the artistic approach for some of these scenes, mm-hmm. and the use of like emotional expression through art, and the ability to create instances where different styles of art come and clash, and what happens when they clash. This movie is a complete lesson on the amalgamation of different arts coming to become one beautiful thing. I absolutely loved the story. I usually get caught up in storylines where if there's multiple individuals in the film or there's multiple points of focus, that I kind of get lost in the sauce a bit. And I felt like they handled multiple characters and their arcs really well. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I thought that as this movie, I did this in my mind. I did this at this movie, but the last time, I don't know if you remember, Spence, a while back when the first Lord of the Rings movie was in theaters, I believe we all went to go see it, or we went to go see it with someone, and a friend of ours, her name's Bonnie, a friend of ours was there, and we were all together. We went to go see it, and as soon as the movie ended, Bonnie stands up and says, "What the heck? Like, where's the rest of the movie?" And it's like that movie, the first movie of Lord of the Rings, is like over 2 hours long, mm-hmm. and you're still waiting. Like, you're like, "No, just bring it up. Let's go. I wanted to have that. I didn't care if it was 2.5 hours, 3 hours. I would have sat through another 2.5, 3 hours to see the conclusion of this story, because it was just so engaging and just so full of like just life in it. Like I wanted to continue on with this engagement with this universe or multiverse. And yeah. So,
I mean, honestly, if next year they're like, we're doing all three, I'm like, I'm there.
Oh, heck
I'm
yeah. Doing this. I will work. I'm sorry. I can't come in. I will sit in that theater in the morning. Like the last time I did a full, full run of, what are they called? What's it called when they do all these movies all throughout the
marathon?
It's been a long day. I've had a really long day today, but okay. I am here to talk about this. Right. The last time I did a marathon, I did all the movies up till the Avengers movie, the first Avengers. And I was in the theaters from...
Oh, you went for that one?
Yeah.
Oh, I saw that. And I was like, I don't think I can.
The El Capitan one?
No. It was here in town.
Ooh.
Are you kidding? You think I'm going to go all the way to L.A.?
Woman. I mean, you get extra people that come through for those runs in the El Capitan.
So,
and they bring in
so here in Sacramento... where we support local theaters.
Local.
local.
I was there at 9 in the morning, and I didn't leave until 1:30 at night. Mm-hmm. And I went through all, like, I think at the time there was like 12 movies or something. This would be a movie franchise that I would watch in marathon sequence several times. Mm. So.
And you could easily and comfortably do it, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, nowadays, before back in the day, it's just like the little lean back chair. They're like,
now we got the fancy
now,
chairs.
Yeah, now
this
we got
is
buttons
doable
on the side
now.
And everything.
And so, they heat them?
Yeah, some of them. They're heated some places. Yeah. They're fantastic when you mean to turn them on.
Very yeah. true.
I mean, essentially, these aren't chairs, they're beds. Let's be honest. These things, they pretty much recline and pick up at certain places where you're just literally flat. So
we're catching up with some of the theaters in Asia. They have like couches and like
and beds.
Stuff.
I've
yeah.
seen photos. I'm like, why? Come on.
I mean, they've got manners. They could do that. We couldn't. Yeah, but I'm like,
did you say they've got manners?
They've got more manners than us because like you could easily do a marathon and just sleep through the ones that you don't want to watch. But this one,
then
I want to watch all
go?
Of it.
Like, anyway, so let's jump into this movie. I'm like, if you're going to go to a marathon and not watch a couple of the movies, then why are you even paying for
the Thor the Dark World?
Yeah, I'm not watching.
I'd watch
Thor,
it.
No.
I'd watch it.
I'm sorry. No.
Excuse me.
I've got one on each end. Let's go.
Thor the Dark World, actually, now that I've thought about it, yes, it's not a great movie, but it also has that great scene with Freya and the Loki scene where he finds out that his mom has died. And it's like, that's a beautiful scene. If ever there was a sign that Loki and Tom Hiddleston was going to be a great addition to the MCU, it was that scene there. So I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm not saying that there's not good things in really boring movies, but like. That's a lot.
This
of
coming from the man who adored the Sharknado franchise. You
yeah,
don't
and
have
I'll stand
to...
by that, too.
That's a B-movie on purpose.
Oh, really?
I know what they're making.
So, anyways, jumping into this movie, let's talk about the performers for this one. So, we get to see a return of Shameik Moore as
yes.
Miles Morales. We get a chance to see Hailee Steinfeld return as Gwen Stacy. We see, what is his name? The one who plays Peter B. Parker.
Nixon. Oh, wait, his name was Nick like... from New Girl.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Jake Johnson, sorry.
My bad. I he's Nick.
we get Jake Johnson as Peter B. Parker. We get Jason Schwartzman, who plays the Spot. And we get a lot of new additions to the story along with all our regular characters, such as Issa Rae, who plays Spider-Woman. We get Daniel Kaluuya, who plays Spider-Punk. We get Mahershala Ali returning as well in an interesting cameo that we'll talk about. We get Oscar Isaac, who is playing
Miguel O'Hara,
Spider-Man, a.k.a.
Spider-Man 2099.
And so we get a lot of different folks. There's also a bunch of other folks who are playing other characters, other notable characters, such as Spider-Bite, who is played by Amanda.
I can see her face. It's problematic that I can
Amanda
see
Amanda Stenberg?
Amanda Stenberg, which if you're not familiar with her, she was the...
she's Rue from The Hunger Games.
Oh,
I'm bringing it back to the
well,
old
she was
school.
Also she was also yeah, she was also the protester friend from the Dear Evan Hansen movie. She was also the main character in the movie The Hate U Give.
Yeah, that's right.
She was really great in that movie.
I just want to bring it back to Rue. Yeah.
You know, we get a lot of great, you know, cameos of certain spider people and so forth, which have all interesting voices, and we'll get into a lot of that. But I have to say, I really enjoyed having Shameik Moore return as Miles Morales. Mm. I thought if ever there was an instance where the studios thought, well, maybe we should get somebody else to play the character and so forth, I feel like it's a perfect amount of time between the first film and this film to give Miles a little bit more of an older feel without getting rid of his youthfulness. And I know Shameik Moore isn't like 19 or 18. I believe he's like...
I thought he's like 28.
Yeah, he is like 28. But like,
he doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, he does a great job as Miles. And I have to like admit, I really like him as Miles Morales. In mm-hmm. fact, I would probably say that if Marvel was smart, they would just have Shameik Moore play Miles Morales in the real life MCU.
Wouldn't be mad about that at all.
I would not be mad at all.
I don't think any of us would be.
You know, we also get great performances from Hailee Steinfeld, who plays Gwen Stacy, who's kind of the key character in this particular film. She's kind of where we start the movie and we move through a lot of the focal points in the story with her. Big shout out to my friend from New Rockstars, MT, who is a huge Hailee Steinfeld stan. He absolutely adores this woman, and I'm pretty sure if she ever walked into his life, he would probably lose his ever loving mind and faint. Yeah,
he would faint.
But her returning to this film as well, it a lot of the returning characters feel like they've never left. Like if you look at like Jake Johnson, Hailee Steinfeld, even Brian Tyree Henry, who plays the dad.
He was so good.
I felt like he was great. Were there any standouts for you guys?
You might as well ask like who was boring and like in this movie.
The answer is everyone, nobody.
I know. Everyone stands out in their own way.
I am throwing it out to the table so I don't just keep talking. I'm giving you guys chances to gush.
I know. But like here's the thing. I don't who do I want to go with first? Karen Sone, who played what's his face from Deadpool, the taxi driver?
Who's
Pavitr Prabhakar.
Yeah. He's Spider-Man India.
He does a great job of just being like this really joyful Spider-Man. Yeah. I have no idea who the Spider-Man is, but like I loved him. Just like him being annoyed at like Miles and his chai tea comments. It's like, you're saying DT, which is funny because Miles made a similar comment to someone else about an ATM machine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I loved him and then also Daniel Kaluuya.
I mean, I have been yearning for an opportunity to see Daniel Kaluuya. Number one, go back to his original voice. He's an English actor, so going back to his English roots, number one. But number two, giving him a chance to really like embody something unique. And we've seen him, you know, be a quiet, you know, horse farmer. We've seen him be, you know, a scorned ex-lover, rebel fighter from Black Panther. Mm-hmm. We've seen him, you know, be the subject of, you know, black torture in Get Out. We've seen him in a few things. The first time I saw him in anything, I saw him on an episode of Black Mirror, and he was just astounding. And he has this great monologue that ends up putting him in a position to where he can keep doing this kind of monologue over and over. But his voice, his natural speaking voice, is just so eloquent and so powerful. And I hadn't really had a chance to see that as of recent. Maybe he's done a smaller film that I missed, but his role as Spider-Punk was probably one of the best roles within the Spider-Man universe that I have seen in a long time. I loved his yeah, go ahead, Spencer. I didn't want to take this.
No. Like I get it. I love like Spider-Punk now. Like this movie does a good job of just introducing people and then you instantly fall in love like these people. Even like people you don't like, you're like, but I want more of you. And
absolutely.
The thing about Spider-Punk is just like he is on the fringes of like the group where he's just like, I'm an anarchist. It's all about just taking down things.
Yeah.
And like he is just magnificent, especially with like his art style too. Mm. We're going to have to come back to the art styles because
I was getting strong vibes of like Afro Samurai or stuff like that. Cause the art style was incredible, but when he took off the mask, even more so, like We'll get back to that. Amy, any highlights? Anybody that you want to highlight?
Jason Schwartzman. I have a massive crush on this ridiculous man. And vocally, he is the spot. Which you're like, oh, when Miles calls him the villain of the week from the jump. Because the way Jason Schwartzman comes off vocally literally sounds like he's not going to be a problem ever.
Yeah.
And I love that he embodies that. Like anxiety. I'm trying to do things and I'm a villain. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is brilliant.
Which if you've seen, sorry, but if you've seen any Wes Anderson movie, Jason Schwartzman is a staple in most of those movies. So if you're familiar with his work there.
All the way back to Rushmore.
Yeah, he is. Well, he's the star of Rushmore.
I know.
But like every movie that he's been a part of, if you're a fan of his roles in that, he is similar to that, but in animated style. So you take that animated vocal with the animated character of the spot, and it just makes for really great banter and silliness and witty yeah. responses.
And he's there's constantly dialogue running. There's a monologue that's continually running through everything that he's trying to like pep himself up and think. And it creates this great kind of like, I don't know what's going on, but everything's going on. Oh, maybe I could fix that. Maybe I'm going to like it's the internal monologue externalized that I really love. And then, yeah, you guys already said, like Spencer already got the people that I like, that I'm like, yes, all day, yes. I will give shout out to Jessica Drew.
Mm-hmm. Issa Rae.
First off, given all that mama energy, mm-hmm. like, yes. Jessica Drew has like a really tumultuous comic book story, like in spades, because there's a whole bunch of different things. Like they started a story with her, they stopped it, they restarted a story with her, they stopped it. They might have murdered her, they might have taken away her powers. Blah. Anyway, the energy that Issa brings is so perfect. Mm-hmm. It straddles that line in such a great way for mentorship vocally, but also in juxtaposition between Oscar Isaac's Miguel O'Hara and Jake Johnson.
Jake Johnson's yeah, Peter B. Parker.
Peter B. Parker as being a parent, mm-hmm. a literal parent, and not just a parent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, the second she stepped onto the scene, I was like, oh, this is like big mom energy coming.
She got yeah. big mom energy. She's coming in. Yeah. And it's, yeah, even comic book wise, she's got big mom energy. And I'm like, yes, yes, queen.
One big character that we haven't had a chance to talk about, which is Miguel O'Hara's character played by Oscar Isaac.
This man's angry.
This man, like Oscar Isaac, is a very versatile actor. Mm-hmm. We've seen him stretch in spades with Moon Knight, which this would make his second Marvel, you know, appearance within the.
Well, same for Haley. Haley's also Kate Bishop.
True. Yeah. But him stepping into this role of Miguel O'Hara, the individual who. He even gives you his backstory, but then you know there's more to his backstory. Oscar Isaac just has a way to create this mysteriousness yet like dangerous vibe within a character, and I feel like he plays Miguel O'Hara so perfectly. Seeing as Oscar Isaac is part Hispanic as well, like he is able to create just this Latin scariness that I can actually say that I get fearful of, because it's this sense of authority that he just demands, not even just earns or respects. It's a sense of demanding that just is there.
Well, and something to give you just a little bit of extra insight, Miguel O'Hara's character originally is an Irish, Spanish immigrant. Like that's his lineage. So you've got Irish anger and the fieriness of a Latino background, and like without even knowing it, he embodies it so well.
Yeah. And if you didn't know that, you would just it is kind of evident through his, like when you see his face, when you see his animation style, when you see him emoting as a character, mm-hmm. you see that emoting, and then Oscar Isaac's voice coming in the background of it pushing forward, it just amplifies all of that emotion in it. I thought he was great in this movie. I feel like he's one of the more unknown Spider-Man. I know we got a glimpse of him at the end of the first film, but he is still a conundrum in this movie. And honestly, I feel like if he makes it at the end of the next movie or somehow whatever happens, I would love to see that translate over to the MCU as well. Like I just, there's so many things in this movie in terms of Easter eggs, in terms of appearances in terms of like homages and references that you just like, you are so appreciative of. And yeah, you just...
The Easter eggs are off the chart in this movie. Yeah. Like, I was seeing things I didn't expect to see. Insomniac Spider-Man?
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd see that guy showing up anywhere.
Very true. Or like, the great homage, because this movie does incorporate some aspects of the Spider-Man lore, not just in TV shows and in comics, but also in movies past, from the Sony Spider-Man and the Fox Spider-Man, aka the Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, because we get great instances of that, of those scenes that were iconic from those movies. Mm-hmm. But we also get a really fun Easter egg with the Tom Holland Spider-Man, where we see the, I guess, confirmation of, I almost called him by his rapper name, Donald Glover, appearing as the Prowler.
Yeah.
Since he is the Aaron in the Tom Holland universe, you know, Uncle Aaron kind of thing. I thought that was really funny. I thought that was really cool. I know we've talked with some folks. I know Amy's mentioned that she's talked with some folks how some people weren't really too keen on the, you know,
the live action inclusion. Like, animated was fine or comic book was good, but anything live action seemed to take them out of that environment and detracted from the story as a whole, which I was like,
that's pushing it a lot. Because, like, it's not like they're even long stretches. Like, a lot of the live action stuff is just them watching it, like, through, like, a video type thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's mostly just Daniel Glover being the only real live action person I can remember right now.
Yeah, just, real
I can't
person
complain about that. Yeah, he's delightful to look at.
No, because it was quick and to the point.
He's in the full outfit. And you're like, dude, they got you set up. They put you in the outfit. And then you sat. And then you're out. You're like, come on.
I really want to see him now in live action.
Yeah, definitely. And in knowing that he's from the Tom Holland universe, that's the confirmation that...
Oh, sorry. I remember there was one other live action, which was Mrs. the shopkeeper from the Venomverse.
Oh, right. I forgot
that was
about
the
her.
Only other one. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. With the spot going through. Yeah. Which was really interesting. Really, you know, I mean, I'm not the biggest proponent for like Venom, the Venom movies and so forth. Maybe the first one was okay, but including her was a little fun callback, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, Sony's got to, you know, bring it back up every now and then.
Right. For some reason.
We didn't stink at this one either. Maybe like it a little bit. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, now that, you know, if you think about it, because of the fact that there's the inclusion of Childish Gambino, that means that the Tom Holland universe is a part of this Spider-Verse, which means it proves much more that there will be, God willing, an appearance of Tom Holland in these movies
somewhere,
maybe,
you know. I'm trying to think of any other, like, there was just so much to see and to look at. So I'm going to throw it over to Amy, our resident comic book enthusiast.
What I do
in terms of all the different cameos of spider people. Now, I'm not the biggest spider
I know you could probably go on for an hour about all the cameos.
So the thing is, and I will preface this first. There is a person, if you have any interest in learning about Spider-Man and the entire Spider-Verse as a whole, who is very eloquent, who is on The Real Rejects and Dropout TV, comes through New Rock Stars. His name is Coy. I believe his last name is Andre, A-N-D-R-E-A-U. He is the spider person, and I say that with a capital P, a capital S, and a capital P. He can talk at length about everything and anything Spider-Man. Mind you, Marvel picks him up to do screenings and to talk to people. So if you want in-depth spider information, he's the guy to go to. I can talk some.
Hey, you're the person on this podcast.
I'm the girl in this chair. So we can definitely talk about some of it, especially when it comes to cameos. I believe that Eddie and I were talking about it.
Coy Jandru?
That's a J.
It's a J.
Yeah, that's
Andrew?
His. That's
Andrew?
It. The J is his middle initial.
Oh. Not here, but okay.
So, yeah, that's his username on Instagram. But yeah, so originally I believe I was watching something and they had mentioned that there were 208 iterations of spider people that they had put into this universe. Mind you, there are a lot of spider people where I'm like, ooh, we can recognize them. Much like when you were saying about the Insomniac, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The Insomniac Spider-Man. There was, I saw grown-up Mayday, Silk. There's variations of Venom. There's the Lego Spider-Man, the car, which was hilarious. Bombastic Batman. What was Batman.
That? Peter B. Parked or something? Or
yeah, Peter B. Parked car or something.
Yeah.
The inclusion of all the little editor boxes I thought was really great to give you kind of insight into the different characters that you might see or things that you're like, I don't know what that means. Like the Hammerverse or Hammerspace, which talks...
Hammerspace.
Where you could hide things in extra storage, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the in-between planiverse. But yeah, there's the... I loved the shout out to Spider-Cat. That is great. The Spider T-Rex, which actually happens in a throat. There's a lot. And
so much.
There's so much. And most of the time, if there was an emphasis or you saw an additional kind of pause on a character, they're telling you and kind of showing you, hey, you need to see this. The one thing I did, this is a really, really minute one because I saw him later in the background, was the Ben Reilly Scarlet Spider, super dramatic Andy Samberg against the wall. Ugh, I'm so angsty. The Ben Reilly Scarlet Spider I know is a little bit chunkier in comic books. And so his, because yeah, he's part of the clones and there's this whole thing. But anyway, I got over it real quick.
The only reason why I recognize that one is because he was in the, there's a certain arc in the main, in the 90s Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man cartoon series, where Ben Reilly shows up. Yep. So, but yeah, go ahead.
No, yeah, that's, I speak some spiders. And then when we get to Spider-Gwen, that's, we can talk about art style specifically starting with her.
Please, let's start with
before we do that, also, I mean, we're forgetting like one of the ultimate like tie-ins for every, just about every.
Oh, the man, the myth, the legend.
Yes, the J. Jonah Jameson played by the incredible J.K. Simmons.
It's him in every single universe.
Yeah.
I can't be mad.
No. And seeing Lego J. Jonah Jameson was even fun too.
boop, boop, boop.
But yeah, I am hoping that he is going to become a more prominent fixture in the Spider-Man movies to come.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's even, we saw him with, literally every single iteration, he's been some type of J. Jonah Jameson.
I don't know if he's in the Andrew Garfield one.
Yeah, yes.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is he the same?
He's got a same type of position, but it's like, it's literally every single movie he has been J. Jonah Jameson, and I am 100% okay with that.
I mean, he just knocked it out of the park from the first time, so like, it's not surprising. Everyone's just like, oh, please just do it again.
We all want to get him pictures of Spider-Man. We don't care what the Spider-Man looks like. Let's go. Like, oh my gosh. Yes, that is... Whew, beautiful in design in all spaces. But speaking of design in all places, talking about art styles, I want to take it from the top because literally when we take it from the top, we get Gwen Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
And this Spider-Gwen, Gwen Stacy, the art style is actually entirely invoking, as well as the animation style, Robbie Rodriguez and Rico Renzi, which actually are the artist and the colorist for the 2014-2015, and continuing up to almost 2017, 2018 run of Spider-Gwen. Hmm. So initially Spider-Gwen starts in 2014 on Edge of the Spider-Verse, which I thought was kind of funny. That's where we see her. She's almost like an alternate world reality. She's a what-if character.
Okay.
And then their covers, literally, you can even look it up. They are literally all watercolor, all the pinks, all the blues, all the yellows. So everything that you see with the pastel and the movement of her world and how she's colored is directly taken from those comic books where there are literal covers where I was like, oh, first 10 minutes, there's a cover from a book I really like. So yeah, I can keep gushing on them, but go, Spencer.
Yeah, so no, just Gwen Stacy's world, I was just floored when we started off here because like just the beautiful colors of like pastel of just pinks and blues, like I was just like, this... We just started. You're already being like, yeah, we can already top what we did last movie. Deal with it.
Yeah.
Like, it's only up from here. And I was like, just enthralled with like, just how this like looked. Because like, I know I probably said this for the last movie about how you could just like stop on a frame and it's an art piece.
Yeah.
And this movie holds true to that too. Like it just every little detail is like something you could just put on a wall and it'd be beautiful.
Yeah.
And so like it even gets better in in Gwen's world when we start mixing people from other realities into Gwen's world, but they retain their original properties, which is like just a detail I love of like people don't shift it around. They are what they are, regardless of where they're from.
Yes.
And who was it? The Vulture? Was it?
Yes, the Renaissance Vulture.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Renaissance Vulture comes in looking like a Da Vinci painting.
So good, though. Yeah. Like, that was, I think, one of the texture contexts between her world, which...
The contrast.
Yeah, thank you. The contrast was so fun to see. Like, and he did look like he was paper. Like, he was going to fall apart if you hit him the wrong way.
Yeah, which was one of her, like, Spider-Gwen's quips. It's like, you're gonna rip.
Well, and speaking of, like, Spider-Gwen's universe, like, I love the fact that the majority of the backgrounds, everything within it, is watercolor. Mm-hmm. Everything in it is, like, these swirls of ever-moving color just being emphasized by the emotion of the scene. It's kind of reminiscent of Lilo and Stitch. And I know this is kind of a weird aside, but like in Lilo and Stitch, because of the fact that during the time of that movie being made, most of the animators were moving to CG. And so there wasn't a lot of money in the budget for animating. So they actually went to the realm of utilizing watercolors for all of their backgrounds in Lilo and Stitch. And you don't really notice it, but when you see it and you're like, oh my gosh, this movie's great, the backdrop is actually watercolor mats they move through. And it just adds to the beauty of that movie altogether. This movie is literally a motion of art where you're seeing these watercolors just build and swirl. And even in the highlights, even in the most like stark contrast of colors, there's a scene at the very beginning of the movie where Gwen's father is there at the museum after that fight with the bird, with the Renaissance Vulture. And there's a scene where he learns that she is actually Spider-Man or Spider-Gwen. And
Spider-Woman.
Yeah. She's a spider person. And the emotion on his face coupled with the light and the coloring where you can see how the weight of the decision to either be a cop or be a dad weighs on him instantly, how you see the dark shadows under his nose, under his chin, under his eyes, and you see like the dispute that he has within himself to make the decisions that he needs to make. And it's coupled in this scene where they're literally far apart, but the color is just so just contrasted and minimal that it makes for like, okay, this is going to go either way. Mm-hmm. And it makes for a beautiful, ultimately contrast. I know we're saying contrast quite a bit, but it makes for a good juxtaposition for the scene that we see when they do meet up again and the chaoticness of, you know, where all of the colors are moving in the room and they're arguing and they're having this conversation and the evolution of that scene transitioning to a more simpler palette once they come to a resolution. And it's like, it's if you're not paying attention to the colors and you're just focusing on the people that are happening, you're missing the forest for the trees. I mean, there's a huge set of emotions that are being put into place. And it's like, it's all part of the same thing. You know, you're watching them and you're listening to them, but you're also seeing the background, you're watching everything. And it's like in regular movies. I mean, when you're seeing, you know, things like in Transformers where worlds are literally being torn apart, or you're seeing in whatever movie where the background is a part of the scene itself. The background in this movie is one of the strongest characters to date in a single animated movie. Because if it not for the background and you just had those scenes in a simple apartment without all of the expression that was going on, it would be an okay scene. Be like, okay, yeah, you know, dad and daughter, you know, work it out, talk together. The background in this movie, the art style of this movie adds so much more depth to the emotion in a lot of these scenes that it ultimately conveys much more of a resolution when it gets to it than just what simply happens, you know? And I was absolutely floored by the expectations that I had were completely blown out of the water when it came to this, you know, because honestly, I thought this movie was just going to be another notch up from the first film. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Spence, right out the gate, this movie blows the last art style out of the water. Like, it's not that it wasn't good.
Right.
It's that, yeah, we can do that still, but check this out.
Yeah.
And they do this.
We have other ideas and they're fresh.
Yes, exactly.
Like, that, I think, is really the main theme of these movies so far, is that these are fresh ideas, like, in some form.
Yeah.
That I feel like we just don't get really anywhere else in Hollywood for the most part right now.
No, like, unless, and this is the thing, unless it's some kind of independent film or somebody
Everything Everywhere.
Yeah, or something
which
that...
Which was shown up, there's a whole bunch of bagels all in this movie.
Hey, hey, you had your time to do your Easter eggs. Give me a second.
Bagels.
But it's like, with a lot of these movies that are coming out nowadays and the risks that are being taken by unique directors and so forth, and we get incredible moments, this is one of those movies where it could have gone south really fast. Like the effort that they were putting into the trajectory that they were wanting to go towards, you know, it could have gone south with like, okay, it's too much or it's doing X, Y, and Z. I feel like this movie has just the right amount of, you know, artistic touch to all the backdrops, to all the scenes, to all the storylines, to all the story elements. It just has the perfect amount to couple with the story and not be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
So, Amy. Did you have any other thoughts? Because you're over here intruding on my thoughts.
I'm always intruding, according to you. I mean, we can talk about Gwen Stacy's was the most unexpected for animation as well as art style. But the other thing that I started realizing was everybody is distinct because their spider people are taken specifically not only from a universe but from a certain person's art style. So I was like, oh. Spider-Man India probably is taking from Indian comic books. And it apparently just dawned on me like 5 minutes ago. And I was like frantically searching through Google to find parallels. And you can see them in the art style, which is probably some of my favorite design for bold line, but balancing between being a 2D and a 3D animation. Because that's probably also one of the most fun, like, segments in there.
Segments. One of the most fun segments.
It's one of the most fun segments in the movie, because that's also where we get the abrupt, like, explosion, a break into the scene of Hobie Hobart Spider-Punk. And I cannot say enough about the not only his entrance, but his introduction into there as an art style. And I know, Spencer, you just want to talk about Hobie.
Honestly, I just wanted to really be like, hey, everyone, can we just redo this one part, like, right now? Like, where the intro is Hobie? Because I was like, I think I was so shocked by, like, the art style that I, like, didn't fully hear what he said.
He's got an entire thing, man.
Excuse me, projector man. Can you reel it back just a couple?
One more time from the top, please.
I mean, he hates the AM, he hates the PM.
Yeah, he hates a lot, and, like, he's just against a lot. And I think, like, at first I was like, how are you a spider person? Like, everyone else is like, I'm for this, and Uncle Ben died, and, like, he's just like, I'm not for this. And I was like, I don't know who this man is, but I'm very interested in, like, what his deal is. And I feel like he's probably, for this movie, one of my favorite new people.
Who's Spider-Punk?
Yeah.
Hmm.
But
yeah.
I thought you were you.
No, I feel like, yes, no, that's interesting. Yes,
that is good. It is good. I mean, he has a great, like, they've reinvented Spider-Punk, which a lot of people are hoping they'll also do the same thing with Spider-Man India, mm-hmm. Because Spider-Man India only had 4 issues and that was it. It was like another alternate timeline.
So that might lead to the whole reason why he doesn't have any more issues, because of the fact that his canon was broken.
Yeah.
In the movie. Yeah.
That might wink.
That's interesting.
That's a hot take, but I like it.
Yeah. I feel like there's, when it comes to a lot of the characters and the art styles taken for each of these characters, I feel like there was so much care put into it, like, to make sure not only that they were going to respect the character that was in print or in the cartoon or in the show or in the movie or whatever, but they also wanted to create a character that was more than just two-dimensional, you know, being on like on a piece of paper or whatever. They wanted to create something that could be, you know, could have movement, could be something that people could gravitate to, which, you know, i.e. Spider-Punk is probably the most, you know, magnanimous characters in this movie that has such a gravitational, like, personality that just draws people in. Because you're expecting Spider-Punk to come in. There's this like running gag that, you know, Spider-Gwen has spent much time with Hobie, you know, doing jobs and missions or whatever, and Miles is kind of getting a little jealous, and you're thinking, oh no, they're going to come to blows. Oh no, it's going to go down. And then Spider-Punk shows up and he's like the most chill anti-establishment individual that you've ever met in animation, and you're like, okay, I don't know if Miles is not going to like this guy later on, but I like this guy. Like, I am totally behind this guy. There was just so much in the art style that really bloomed. Even back to Miles's universe.
Yeah.
You know, the art style that we saw last time, it's still there, but there's also another added layer of, like, almost maturity.
It's been fine-tuned. Like, you start seeing that his edges are no longer, and this is going to sound funny, not chunky, but there's the definition of them have become harder and more solidified, and you see it for everyone that lives in that Earth variation. And it's so interesting to see where, like, his roommate has suddenly not only gotten a lot more stretched out, but also has a lot more contouring and detail to him than the first one. And you see it in Miles in and of himself, because I can be very honest that I didn't think I noticed as much of, in the first one, there's pattern and there's texture to his skin tone as well as his clothes. But here it's just turned up a couple of notches where you're seeing every mark. You're seeing every, I'm not saying mark isn't a bad thing, but like the fibers and the texture is more realized. It's almost like things are coming into clarity and more focus. And I don't know if that's intentional. Hopefully it is. But it's almost like the maturing of a project, because you just keep getting better at drawing it or creating it or producing that. That everything just, it's up a couple of notches. It's like the next best batch of chili. Like, the first batch was okay. And I'm not meaning it was bad okay. I mean, it was good okay.
It was good.
But the next one, you're like, okay. It's a little more something okay. I see you. So, yeah.
And that kind of brings us over to, like, other highlights and issues. I mean, honestly, in terms of issues, I didn't really see any in this movie.
The only issue I had was they didn't start Beyond the Spider-Verse right after the movie ended.
Or at least give you a teaser.
I know.
Let's be honest. Everyone was waiting in my theater, was waiting for that teaser. And I was like, I don't think it's coming, guys.
Yeah, they were like, you get nothing.
See you next year. Thank you for sitting. We'll see you later.
Highlights. Let's talk highlights. What was the scene or what was part of it that you really absolutely want to highlight? It looks like Amy's trying to do the Spider-Man, you know, midair jump thing. So
no, the flipping music. This soundtrack was.
You really just took that from Spencer? Huh?
No. Anyone can bring it up. I don't have to be the
caring
music
and sharing.
Man.
It can be fun.
Caring and sharing.
Caring and sharing. Yeah, the music on this. Yeah, I can't. Spencer, help.
Okay, so like, what was it?
So you started out, and then you just like, I can't. Spencer's too big. Take it.
No.
Okay, so like, I think it was.
Amy's dying over here. Hold on, let's see if she'll snort. Was she snort? Yeah, she's covering her nose. What?
I'm good.
You're good.
You good?
I don't think you are. Go, what are you waving your hands
for? Okay, all right. So I think it was about 2 days before my music player notified me. It's like, hey, they put out the first sound, like, track for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And I was like, I'm so glad you know me. And so, like, I was, like, instantly, like, listening to it. And it was the track that we played at the top. My name is Miles Morales. Mm-hmm. It's been one of the ones that I've just been playing on a loop, like, before I saw the movie and even after I saw the movie. Because I was like... it slaps. Like, yeah, a lot of the music in this, like, just slaps. Like, he did such a great job that, like, I think just talking about my favorite tracks from this movie, it's going to be this one, My Name is Miles Morales, and the last track that we hear, which is Across the Spider-Verse Starting a Band. That one is, like, just, like, the finale, like, music where, like, you know, Gwen's getting, like,
the band back together.
Yeah. So, like, really, they knocked the soundtrack out of the park. Amy, do you have more to say?
I mean, I can't think of... I think some of my favorite sequences that tied to the music was the when Gwen shows up to see Miles, inadvertently, wink, to see Miles, and they're doing the swinging through the city and the soundtrack, and the song that's playing behind it. There is such joy and levity to the soundtrack, even while it's dealing with the hard stuff, that it's just, as to quote Spencer, it slaps. Like, there's...
Well, and if you take the entire soundtrack from Metro Boomin for Spider-Man into the Across the Spider-Verse, every single one of those songs is absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what you hear throughout the film itself is from that particular artist, especially the main song, which I believe is Hummingbird. That's the one that's playing when he's in bed and Gwen kind of shows up through the portal.
You just reminded me, I did not listen to the second soundtrack to this movie. I forgot about it.
You were just doing the composition. I forgot about the other one.
Well, so Metro Boomin actually does a lot of collaborations with other artists for this soundtrack. Sorry, I got a little hiccup. Like ASAP Rocky, 21 Savage, you know, WizKid. You got Sway Lee. You got a lot of different folks who are collaborating with him on this soundtrack, and it is truly like one of the. It's going to rival. I earnestly feel it is going to rival that first Black Panther soundtrack, because every single one of these songs fits in. And I know with the first soundtrack to Into the Spider-Verse, we got a lot of different, you know, artists throughout that soundtrack. I know Sunflower was a really big one from Post Malone. This one I feel has a little bit more continuity through it, and it has like a this same vein that just runs from beginning to end. It's a whole journey in itself. So if they ever decide just to do the movie without words and just the soundtrack playing over and over, I'd be
somebody
happy.
Somebody will. You know. Hopefully somebody does.
But yeah, if you get a chance, Spence, listen to that soundtrack because it is really good.
I just don't know how. I'm so preoccupied. That's how I miss this.
And the thing is, I'm not a huge rap fan. But I do love how collaborators, you know, artists collaborating on certain soundtracks. I love how if it works really well. And this is one of those soundtracks that just works really well from beginning to end. So yeah, the music, I don't know if the music was Amy's highlight and then you had it, or if you still have another highlight, Spencer, Amy kind of messed it all up all over the place. So
I panicked, but the handoff was good because
you laughed.
I panicked.
Yeah. Spencer, was there any other highlights since Amy's got taken?
Oh, geez. Let's see. The problem is there's so many things in this movie. You just end up highlighting the entire movie, yeah. To be perfectly honest. But let's go with just the overall story. Honestly, this was pretty good. Like it deals, like, Miles has, like, grown up a few years, and so, like, you know, he's been Spider-Man for...
Which he's a sophomore in this one, right? I believe he's a sophomore, because when they talk to the guidance counselor, they're like, I know he's just a sophomore, but we're trying to get a leg up on the college thing.
Why do you feel like it's been more than, like, 1 year?
Because it's been 5 years since the last movie.
It's 1 year and some months, but yeah, he was a sophomore.
Okay, because I was thinking, like, oh, 2 years. Okay, so a year and some months. But yeah, just the overall, like, story is very solid of, like, you know, just Miles, like, doing his own thing, him running into, like, another villain of the week who very quickly, like, becomes a real threat. And I feel like this is one of the things the movie does incredibly well is just the presentation of the spot, like, in the beginning of the movie
versus where he's at the end.
Yeah, like, at the beginning of the movie, you're like, okay, so this is just, like, you know, the intro villain, and, like, we're gonna because, like, he's like, you're my nemesis, Spider-Man, and he's like, who even are you? You hit me with a bagel, and you're like, from the first bagel, movie?
The bagel.
Yeah, like just learning the backstory, you're just like, okay, like deal with this guy, Miles. And so Miles deals with him, kind of. And so like it just evolves from there where like...
Well, and even then, like the catalyst that, no pun intended, kicks off our villain into his kind of journey to becoming a massive supervillain is literally he's fighting Miles and he gives this big old expose on how they're connected and the bagel and all this and that. And then he trips and kicks himself into one of his spots, you know, and it's
kicks his own butt.
He kicks his own butt into and causes himself to fall into one of those spots where he then realizes that he can actually become an interdimensional being to go into other universes and pull whatever he's doing. But yeah, that was a really interesting turn in this story because you see it in the trailers and you're like, ah, there must be something bigger at play. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, you know, whatever. And then it comes to find that like the spot is actually the one that you need to worry about. You know, because he just completely changes, you know, his persona from being, you know, kind of oafish and falling over himself and making mistakes to becoming this individual who plans to ruin Spider-Man's life.
He has a very Incrediboy. At the beginning, he's very Incrediboy.
Mm, yes.
And he gets to a big syndrome part, but he's a lot worse.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, was there anything else you wanted to? Because you said the story.
Oh, yeah, and I stopped there, but then, like, just from there to, like, the launch of, like, just a whole bunch of new Spire people, the introduction of Miguel, who I personally have some interesting questions about his own backstory, because he gives a backstory, and I'm like, I don't know if that makes as much sense as you think it does, Miguel.
Exactly, yeah. And I'm like, in what? So you're going to take over your, and according to the film, he takes over his parallel universe's dead individual. Mm-hmm. He takes over his life because he's died and just like resumes as if everything was fine.
Yeah. Let's actually dive into this part because this is the one part of the movie where I'm like, this is not like, we messed up. Like there's something here and I feel like it's going to come back up in like the next movie because this movie has shown me that they're willing to like, show you, oh, this might be a problem, but like not address it for a while. Mm. So Miguel, like he lost his family, I believe it was, and you know, he has the ability to travel the multiverse, and he found one where he died, but his family lived, so he's just like, I'm gonna step in and just continue living there. Mm-hmm. And things were fine apparently. Until they weren't, where he says and claims that his presence disrupted the script, basically, of like how things were supposed to go in that universe and just caused the whole thing to collapse.
Well, let's take a look at the Doc and Mom. What happened when we had somebody who was a Nexus being that tried to insert themselves into
the
another?
The Doc and the Mom? What?
Doctor Strange.
Okay, why don't you use real words here? There you go.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, when you look at that, we had a very similar kind of arc that happened in there with Scarlet Witch, right? Mm-hmm. Where she was essentially looking everywhere to find where everything was working out and she had kids. And she didn't get to place herself into that world. And even temporarily, it was destroying that chain of the multiverse, that strand of the sacred timeline or what have you. Mm-hmm. So you have Miguel who understands what happens when you step out of line, but also the fact that there's a couple other things that probably have happened in 2099 for his family to be dead.
My point of issue, I suppose, is if we're going to say all that, then what the heck's happening with Miles? Because like he is so far off script by being Spider-Man when he shouldn't be that it seems like that should have caused the problem already.
Yeah.
But like...
Very true. Like you would assume that him existing as Spider-Man would have created, you know, those... What did Miguel call him? Where the black stuff started showing up.
Yeah. Like dark because matter. That happened.
Huh?
Dark matter. It's dark matter. No, it's dark matter that consumes
it's like
it.
It's like anomalies or whatever.
Well, because like that happened in Spider-Man India's world and it was instantly like the second they were even briefly off script, it was like, nope, this is going badly.
Yeah.
And so like it just comes into question of like, what's going on with Miles' universe, where like Miles can be Spider-Man and the Spot can exist when he probably shouldn't have in the first place either, and be a multiverse level threat. Like, yeah. Like I'm sure they're gonna answer it in the next movie, but I'm just curious on where we're going with this.
Yeah, I feel like the fact that he can exist and his universe has not been swallowed up by in that moment when he got bit, because you would assume in the moment he got bit, if that was not supposed to be, then those anomalies would have started to occur instantly. Mm-hmm. And because I'm pretty sure Miguel, as well as the rest of his team of Spider Crew, would have showed up instantly to address the anomalies and would have started working to fix it.
Yeah.
But instead, Miles has been, and we've already established this, he's been Spider-Man already for a year and some change, and his universe is still intact.
Yeah.
Which means he is supposed to be Spider-Man. And he was supposed to be bit. So it adds a lot of, like, going back to what your original thought was, it adds a lot more questions to the intentions behind Miguel and what he's doing, or if it's an effort to continually cover up his own mess, because maybe he's the one who's not supposed to exist. And the fact that every time he sends individuals into any situation or something happens, those anomalies happen because he exists.
Mm.
You know, am I getting, Amy's over here winking and trying to.
I ain't winking and nothing.
She's like, I know things and I'm not going to say it.
The opportunity for you to visit your local comic book store. Support small businesses and learn some comic lore is always available to anybody.
But seeing as we're a film podcast, why don't you clue us in here? Come on.
No.
Really? Really?
Nice, I like it.
We can take it off air. I'm happy to take it off air.
We're already doing spoil. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, spoilers for this movie, not like the entire Spider-Man comic
franchise. Well, does the comic book actually kind of give trajectory to where this movie's going?
Lots of comic books give trajectory to this movie.
Okay, never mind. It's She's like, never mind. Just, you're done.
Me,
just
let
stop.
Let me clear this
just
up. Stop.
No, you're not going to clear anything up. You're going to add
like
more.
A crossover.
You're going to add
much
more
like
confusion. I could turn you down from here if you want.
You can. Go for it. Okay. Because you know what happens? I could just get louder.
Because of the fact that you're not going to share, so all you're going to do is just tease people more, and that nobody likes to tease.
Really? There's a whole industry for people that don't like teasing, but like teasing that works out well, and people make money. Anyway.
Why do you got to be dirty for it? Seriously?
You were dirty first. So.
Oh my God.
Much like any crossover, there's lots of different stories that are tying into and building into this story. The Spider-Verse stories in and of themselves, these movies, have been original, which means they're not only cherry picking, but they're taking things that they liked from all of the comic books to combine, which means I can give you vagaries, but the thing is a vagary. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we're fine with that.
Yeah.
Continue.
But so the thing
maybe
is.
Maybe one of us, but that just sounds weird. Go ahead.
Thanks. So there's lots of opportunities for you to explore how it happens in the comic books, but you also have to come into this movie with the understanding that it's not going to be beat for beat. Because literally, I remember in seeing the beginning of this movie where Papa Gwen is still there. And I'm like, oh, you're Captain Stacy, you're supposed to be dead. Like every iteration of you is dead, including in Spider-Gwen. You're dead. Like, okay, you're still here. So I couldn't be upset for them not taking that turn where I expected that turn, because things need to evolve and move forward in a way that is pleasing to everybody.
That literally said nothing in a long stretch of time.
Are for everybody, so, if you want to read and find out, go
so,
for
okay,
it.
Okay, let's go ahead and move to, well, so my highlight for this movie, I absolutely, speaking of Miguel, I loved the art style that was the person Miguel, as well as the suit that he wore. Because if you watch through that movie, that whole sequence where we have the chase scene and everything going on, one thing you can recognize is that with Miles being in that, in Nueva York, 2099, you are seeing there's a sense of degradation happening to Miguel's animation style. Not the suit, but the person. Like when you see his face, at first, it's very well crisp. There's really strong lines. But as it continues, there's a sense of like as he's pushing himself and so forth, his like animation, his art style is slowly degrading. And it's almost as if Miles being in that universe is correcting whatever Miguel being in that universe is disrupting. And it's interesting that however that story is going to go, that was one of the biggest things that you notice right away. Like even when they do the close-ups really quick where they're chasing each other on that train, the close-ups that they do really quick of Miguel's face, his face doesn't, it looks like it aged even to a slight degree. And it's unique enough that you're like, I wonder where this is going to go. I wonder why, you know, and those are all the questions that, you know, I'm having for the next film, and hopefully it gets answered since Amy's gatekeeping over here. So
yeah, unfortunately, I don't know anything about Miguel because like that was a thing. I was like, Miguel looks so different from everyone in a very intentional way, but I don't know enough about this character to like glean any insight if that means anything or not. But
with Amy and her smug face over here. No, all right, so let's smug. This not brings smug. Us to our roundtable question. I do have a question for the table, and I want to know what your guys' thoughts are. Question is, outside of the main crew, i.e. Spider-Gwen, Spider-Punk, Spider-Noir, Peter B. Parker, Spider-Pig, what is her name?
Penny.
Penny Parker, Penny. Even Miguel O'Hara in Spider-Man 2099, who would you like to see make the transition to the main MCU?
I already know what I'm going to say.
All right, let's start with Amy.
No, I want Spencer to go.
I
want to
build up his. Go ahead. You're first, since you have yours probably already in mind.
Yeah, because it would be really dumb and hilarious. Also, you can ask me about my highlight. So the person that I would actually like to see
Pause real quick. Your highlight was the one that you couldn't fulfill on. So that was on you. That wasn't on us. You passed it over to him to
sequence.
Do.
There you go. Okay. So my person that I would like to see in the MCU, because it would be completely random. I technically have two, but I'll go with the one that's really just not going to happen in a million years.
Give us
years.
The two.
Okay, first one, Spider-Cat. Seems super dumb.
Oh my God.
Super hilarious, super easy. Because Ned all needs to do is get bored and be like, look, it's Spider-Cat. And I'm like, yes, we're good. Like, it's super dumb, but we sneak it in. And then if the cat happens to have spider powers, it'll be even cuter. So that one is a really easy callback, really easy Easter egg to pop in there. The other one, which would be a lot weirder and a lot harder to do in actual MCU canon, but now that we have acknowledged that time travel is possible, would be Web Slinger and Widow, because I loved their storyline. He's the cowboy Spider-Man with his spider horse.
Did that was not understand what was happening with that horse.
Spider powers. The horse.
Yeah, the horse is retracted.
Nope.
By the way, I would love to see that Spider-Cat face off with Goose from Captain Marvel, the Flurkin.
Yes, with the Flurkin.
Just have a little cat adventure
fight,
for them.
Cat,
so.
Fight, cat, fight.
Spencer.
The Spider Tyrannosaurus Rex. Like, what? I know nothing about this comics. I just know how. Like, is he just from a New York that has a whole bunch of dinosaurs or what?
It's prehistoric.
Prehistoric Manhattan or something. No, Dino Hatton. Who knows?
Yeah, I know nothing. So I'm like, I would love to see just Tom Holland run into T-Rex.
And he just stops and he's like,
To whip.
Swip, swip.
Did you have any other ones or just that one?
No, that's the one.
That's the one.
What about you, Ed?
Honestly, I would like to see Spider-Bite come into the main MCU as an AI or a hologram generated construct, much like how Tony Stark did the whole thing at the end of Endgame, where he appears to, you know, Morgan and the family. I feel like Spider-Bite could create something like that and be able to create like this movable Spider-Bite individual with drones or whatnot and do all the things that you would expect, you know, what she does now. But I think that would be a really fun character, especially if you have Amanda Steinfried actually play that character, which she totally could in the MCU. But I was thinking, I was like, that'd be really cool because we lost a technological genius in the MCU, so to speak.
We just forgot about him.
Yeah. But, you know, hopefully there's an opportunity where we bring in more alongside. I'm sorry, what is her name from...
Riri Williams, which technically, when you're talking about AIs, I was like, in the comic books, Tony Stark is frozen on ice and has an AI that actually helps Riri, much akin to Jarvis, but is fully like, boom, like you can see him like.
So that hologram, that generated hologram. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, that about wraps up this episode. So let's go ahead and go around the table and give our thoughts. Review: does the film pass or fail? And how many monocles? Let's start with Spencer.
Yeah, this movie just passes. Like, it's not even a question.
All this conversation, like, well,
it fails. No, this movie passes. It is just a triumph of like style and art and story and just great acting. Like, it's got the gamut. If you have any interest in seeing this movie, see it. I implore you, especially if you have not seen the first one, go back and watch that first. It's a delightful movie, and this movie is also great. So it gets a 5 out of 5. Please see this movie, Amy.
All right. If you couldn't figure it out, this movie passes. You're not going to find it failing at this table today. And just to reiterate some of what Spencer said, this runs the gamut. This speaks to everybody. I know I talked to somebody earlier this week that said they felt and they were nervous that Spider-Man and the Spider-Verse series saga was going to become too fan service-y. And I like to point out that anytime a property which is so beloved and so cherished by so many people transitions to different forms of media, you've got to make sure that you're nodding to the people that have been there since the beginning. Mm-hmm. There's no way to avoid it. And this movie does not go overtly fan service-y. It gives you more space to ask questions about a verse that you might not know even exists. Much like the spiderwebs on the tree that is the sacred timeline, they are everywhere, interwebbed, interconnecting.
Everything and, everywhere all at once.
And a little bit and a little bit of everything everywhere all at once. Also, side note, I want to shout out really quick to the one kid, the 14-year-old that did the animation for that entire Lego scene in this movie.
Cool.
Yes, his name, I think, is Preston Mutaga. He had recreated the entire trailer in Lego form on YouTube in January. Mm-hmm. He got seen by the directors and the producers, and they're like, man, we love you. And he is responsible for that entire Lego sequence.
Oh, that's really awesome.
So I think that's really wonderful. And just goes to show you that the big nerds always can recognize the little nerds. Keep creating. I will definitely be in the seat at the midnight showing of Beyond the Spider-Verse. 5 out of 5 for me.
As for myself, I feel like this, it's a given. Like we said, it's unanimous all the way around. This story passes for me. The way it comes full circle, even in this part one of a two-part series, it definitely gives a sense of fulfillment and resolve in certain aspects of the story element. And in other aspects, it gives you enough to tease you, to bring you back for the sequel. I am absolutely floored at how well stories are still being written for, number one, out of Sony. That's a big one. Number two, for MCU films on the animated front, because that is probably the least amount of effort being done so far in their animation department. So seeing this, the rest of animated Marvel animated shows, you need to bring it up. In terms of monocles, I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5. This movie is absolutely astounding. It's beautiful. It is one of those movies where you want to see it over and over, and you could probably still miss a lot of the dialogue because it just looks so beautiful. Everything that Stan Lee has come to build within the, not only the MCU, but just the Marvel Universe as a whole, we have barely touched the surface of a lot of it, and these are the types of movies that allow us to dig deeper, much like this show where we try to dig deeper into film. This is by far one of the best animated films in the last 5 years, including into the Spider-Verse, because this builds on that, and I just cannot wait. Much like Amy said, I am going to be in, you know, the first midnight showing, probably not midnight, maybe 6 p.m. the day before, but one of the earliest showings for this next one, because I cannot wait to see how this story resolves. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosophers.com. There we have allegedly over 300 episodes, anything from action, anime, comedy, even a review on this first film. You can check it out over there at our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also find us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. There we post a lot of our shenanigans, as well as posting all of our extra content, such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Gene on Scene, which can be found where?
The only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane Unseen. And this last episode for Sharknado was literally a Jane Unseen.
It was a full Jane Unseen episode.
We can't post it on Instagram. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, they won't let us. But yeah, you can check out all that extra great content over there. You can also find us wherever podcasts are streaming, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those apps. Look for us there at The Film Losphers. Give us a follow or subscribe. Listen in. Let us know how we're doing. Drop us a line in the comments. And if you think we're worth it, give it a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
At this point, yes.
No beep, boop, beep, boop.
This point.
Beep, beep.
But again, if you get a chance, check out this movie. It is in theaters right now. If you have a chance, check it out in the XD or whatever large format you can find it
or
in.
Or IMAX.
Or IMAX.
IMAX. It was solid. IMAX. So,
but yeah, this movie is absolute, just an absolute gem. And I feel like this is going to go into the annals of history within the great animation revolution that's happening nowadays. And honestly, if everybody else doesn't jump on board with what's going on in terms of art style, they really need to see this as the poster for what they need to do next.
To quote Guillermo del Toro, animation is art.
That is true. So, again, that wraps up this episode. So, from all of us here at The Film Losphers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Thwip Amy.
Class dismissed.